Blog Talk Radio.
Alright, this is Meth Lab Radio, of course, brought to you by Literary Underground. You guys can go to www.theliteraryunderground.org for all your information about that. And I'm one half of your hosts, Frankie Metro. Of course, with me on the line is the head operator himself, Nuamba Flamingo. Nuamba, how's it going, brother?
What's up, man? Chilling. How you doing?
Good, man. I just hating on Skype as always. You know how it goes.
Hating on Skype?
Yeah.
Skype
I'm
hating
or on
Skype. Hating on?
No, I'm hating on Skype.
Why are you hating on Skype?
Skype's cool, man.
Why you got a problem with Skype, motherfucker?
Because it's always giving me shit, man. I don't know.
Maybe you didn't think to it. What the fuck did you do to Skype? It is angry.
I called it a very bad name. And, you know, Skype's too hardcore for me, man. Skype's too hardcore.
I think it is too, man. I think Skype is way too fucking hardcore.
Yeah.
Way too fucking
You
hardcore.
Know what? I also hear that, you know, the Meth Lab is too hardcore for some people. I've heard that said about the Meth Lab.
It is, man. Even people who punch old ladies in the face. Punching an old lady in the face, like a 70, 80-year-old woman in the face, that's okay. But the meth lab is.
I can totally see that logic. I can totally see that logic. Straight up.
Yeah. Have you ever punched a 70-year-old woman in the face?
I have.
You ever punched a 70-year-old?
Yeah. No. Well, no, I was going to say I have not actually punched a woman in the face. But I think I did that to a transvestite once. So, I mean, does that count if it's like a transvestite and everything?
I don't know, man. It's kind of a different thing. I mean, I got punched a transvestite in the face. That actually happened to me. I was attacked by a violent gang of ladies.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, they robbed me. Yeah, they beat me up and they robbed me and they stole my shoes. Not both my shoes, just one of my shoes. So I had to walk home with only one shoe on. Really fucked up, man.
Fucked
up, man.
That's a Meth Lab story right there.
Right.
Straight up.
I
was going to say...
Yo, you there? Metro. Fox really is fucking with us today.
Yeah, it sure is, man. It definitely is.
We shouldn't be calling it names, man. It's all your fault. You upset.
I know. Yeah, I know. It's all my fault. That's why I'm packing, man. I've actually got backup. So I got the phone back up. So Skype, you want to play a little bitch session with me? I'm ready. I did want to mention that, you know, if you guys do want to call in, I do see that there is one person on the switchboard, a 760 area code, who will be getting to you here momentarily. But if anybody else wants to call in, please feel free. Number to call in, 805-856-2808. As soon as I call out 706, they drop off the line real quick. So, wow. Somebody thought we were too hardcore there again, man. I guess. I don't know how that
works.
I don't know, man. I kind of feel like just getting started, jumping in this, and I got a story here that I kind of wanted your opinion on, if that was all right with you, sir.
Sure, man. Hey, let's read some shit.
Fucking A. This is from Parasitic Hand Guy for Successful Employment. In his former life, Ephraim Zinya lived on St. Lawrence Island in the remote, underpopulated village of Zabunga. His love for animals began with the narlugas and growler bears of the Bering Sea. Made a career from photographing narwhals, wildlife taxidermy, and trade with the local Yupik tribe, as well as money on the side harvesting migratory birds such as emperor geese, glaucus gulls, and the harlequin. In social circles, Ephraim boasted about his historical heritage, his grandfather being one of the last documented mailmen who worked for the defunct dog sled mail service in the mid to late 60s. One hunting season, while sitting in a sink box with his aim sharp on a crested auklet, the pneumatic PVC battery gun Ephraim carried slipped from his grip and unloaded in his face, alerting the flock to his presence as a small swirl of blood pooled where the top of his Yupik hat bobbed like a sinker, its ducktail feathers cutting the water like strong reeds encased in ice. A nearby Alagnagi heard the 30 shots from the one squeeze of Ephraim's trigger and left his ivory stone and the torn belly of a walrus to investigate. Being a renowned shaman among his people, when the old man found his body, he offered Ephraim's floating corpse as a thing given to the wing of absent sea gliders, leaving the former taxidermist, photographer, trader, harvester's reincarnated fate to the discretion of the creator and Ephraim's own objective desires. When his new eyes opened, he found himself on four hooves being pushed from the womb of a mule deer in Craig, Colorado. The cave was shallow, and the sound of his new mother's lapping tongue as she attended to the afterbirth was amplified to his new ears. He spent the next three seasons in constant peril, avoiding the numerous hunters who frequented the mountainsides, the poachers and the starving woodsmen, the trophy seekers and the sport enthusiasts. Some were local, some were from far away. There were even men and women from Savunga that had made such a trips on occasion in search of the new American hunt. Although Ephraim evaded the bullets and his trail always remained faint, at the age of five, his strong legs began to stagger. He drooled constantly, and his head lulled between his lowered ears. The luster in his new coat began to dry and shed in patches. His ribs started to show through his hide, and he grew less cautious in the presence of the hunter. When he finally died and was found, his head was cut from his body and shipped to a laboratory for inspection. The results of his lymph node and brain analysis were irrefutable. Ephraim's new body had died from chronic wasting disease. Local hunters were promptly notified of the infection.
Oh. Wow, a little bit of karma.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I think that people who hunt for fun are, like, really fucked up, man. You know?
Yeah.
Like, it's one thing if you're out hunting for, like, or, you know, for food to eat, survive. But if you're out just shooting shit, like, to shoot it, I don't know, man. That's really fucked up. So I would like to see people like that reincarnated as some kind of animal and then really fucked up.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, like, the tribe I was talking... Well, the tribe I was talking about there, the Yupik, or Yukak, I don't even know how to pronounce it, to be honest with you, but... they are Alaskan Eskimos near the Bering Sea there. And, you know, one of the things that they really take seriously is hunting ceremonies and, like, hunting rituals and what have you. And that's why I threw in that hat, is because that was kind of the sign that he was about to go through some serious, like, karmic justice, I guess is what you would call that. Because the hat that that he was wearing had the tail feathers of a duck on that, and that has a huge significance for the Yupik Eskimo tribe in Alaska. So,
well, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if I have anything, you know, necessarily like against the Eskimos out there hunting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and for them, you know, an Eskimo, you're living out in the middle of fucking Alaska. There probably ain't any supermarkets around. Gotta go out and fucking shoot something to eat it. So,
exactly.
I guess, yeah, I mean, it's like survival Darwinism. You know, they gotta survive there in the middle of Alaska. But, I don't know, man.
Yeah.
It's a good question. Like, when you think about it, like, what is ethical, what is karma. If, like, you know, shooting animals, you know, to survive, I mean, you got to look at it from both perspectives. So, I mean, did the guy get what he deserved exactly? I don't know. But, you know, he did, you know, get what maybe was him from the universe. You know, if they're from the universe, that, you know, you reap what you sow, as the cliche goes. So, I don't know, man. It's an interesting piece, man. I definitely dig you, you know, doing something about Eskimos. Rare. Hear anybody write about Eskimos context. So, it's pretty cool. I like it.
Oh, thanks, bro. I appreciate that. I've had a shitload of fun writing these stories with Aurora Kill Poet and Bud Smith, and, you know, it's been big fun. I did want to mention that I'm seeing there's quite a few people walking in and out of the chat room there, so welcome, guys. Appreciate you guys coming by. And Mr. Sigerson's in there. Hey, Sigerson. How's it going, brother? Oh, good to see you.
Sigerson. Yeah. Always cool to see Sigerson.
We got zero callers right now, so I think what that means, Mr. Nuwa the Flamingo, is that possibly it's time for you to drop something on us here, sir.
Yeah, man. Why don't I read something hard?
Okay.
Read something hardcore. I mean, we're called Social Mansion. The newly built McMansion towered over every other house on. Everyone, particularly the old-timers, hated it and tried to block its construction. The cat lady next was especially incensed and petitioned the town and civil court to stop its construction under zoning laws. When her petition failed, she went completely ballistic and brutally drawn protest signs all over her front yard, angrily screamed at, harassed the INS workers during the construction. However, none of her efforts were able to stop the McMansion from being built, and built it was. The guy who'd had the previous torn down so it could be built, sort of hotshot businessman. After moving in, no one saw him much as he didn't talk to or associate with anyone in the neighborhood and was usually out of town on business trips. On the few occasions you did see him, though, he cut a striking character. He was a large, red-faced bear of a man. He talked loudly and animated a cell piece. I can't ever remember seeing him not yelling into that ear. His son, Tom, enrolled in my high school, and on an overcast, chilly morning, we met at our school's bus stop. Tom was completely different from his father. He was short and thin, as opposed to his dad, who was unusually tall and portly. Tom was also somewhat quiet and soft-spoken, though friendly, and we often struck up a fast friendship. Tom was into the same things as me, smoking weed and playing video games. Tom especially loved to play video games. It was basically the only thing he talked about or did. In an awesome spot to game, too, is his dad's platinum card afforded him the ability to smash a bedroom with a big screen TV, surround sound stereo system, leather couches, and practically every type. His bedroom instantly became the place where every other stoner in school would congregate after, before, or even during class to play video games and get high. I started going over that every day. His place was the perfect spot for our activities since his dad was never home and his mom was always passed out drunk on a sofa downstairs in the living room. Speaking of his mom, see, every single time I went over there, morning, day, or night, she'd be passed out on the next to an empty bottle, the TV across from her on and blasting at a high decibel, usually tuned to E or some other reality TV channel. It started to worry me, and one day I saw her seeming so zonked out that I thought she might be dead at Tom. He laughed and told me how she's always like that and how her daily routine is to get up, microwave something, drink vodka, watch TV, then pass out again. And he said that when she passes out, she's gone so cold that you could do anything to her and she wouldn't wake up. Suddenly he got a mischievous grin on his face and told me to come check something out. I followed him downstairs to the room, and he walked over to his mom, who was lying like a zombie, sleeping with her eyes open, face up on the couch, a string of drool dripping out of her mouth. "See," he said to me, devilishly, and he pulled open her white bath, feeling her naked body. "Do anything to her," he said, staring down at her motionless body, a noticeable bulge forming in his pants. His mom was an attractive woman. In her prime, she must have been a blonde bombshell and was now a total MILF. Being a horny couldn't help but gaze in awe of a likely new figure for a few seconds. So overwhelmed by guilt and awkwardness, Lily suggested to Tom that we adjourn upstairs for some bonghets. Tom stared for a little bit longer, and he smiled and tied her rolled back shut. Then we returned to his room and ripped pulls from the bong. But I couldn't get high. The more what happened sunk in, the more disturbed and sickened I became. I left the lot planned and went home. I didn't see Tom in school for the next week or so, which wasn't unusual because he ditched a lot, and I didn't go over to his there. One early Sunday, cavalcade of cop cars and moving ended on his house. Sheriff's deputies pounced in and emptied out the house's belongings into trucks. Everyone in the neighborhood came out, stood on lawns, watched the spectacle hole. Tom's mom, comatose as usual, opened out and practically came in the back seat of a squad car by 2 feet. I watched from my bedroom window and was waiting to see Tom. In fact, I never heard from him again. The news came out shortly thereafter that Tom was involved in an elaborate insider trading scandal and had fled the country. The McMansion was auctioned and bought by an anonymous. Much to the neighborhood's delight, it was torn down. But instead of a new house, a small library was built in its place, which most people in the neighborhood, especially the old-timers, opposed vehemently, petitioned against. And the cat lady next door again planted protest signs all over her front yard and screamed every day at during the construction. And that's it.
Wow. Wow. So is that a true story, bro? Is that a...
Yeah, there are some elements of that that are actually true, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, man. That's some good shit. I really dug the library thing. And to be honest with you, it was I don't know if it was like, it may have been on my end or something like that, but it just kept cutting out every now and again. But it was weird because, like, it would pick right up on, like, it would only cut out on these one at the end of, like, each sentence or something like that. And, and then it would be like, it's like crazy Mad Libs almost. So you could just, like, insert any, like, word you want to. It's pretty crazy, so.
Yeah,
let's see, we got a question. I actually got a question from Sigerson in the chat room here. He's asking me, is the meth lab on autopilot? Are we on autopilot, man?
I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah. Maybe. I don't know.
Sometimes we go into zombie. What about that? Zombie pilot.
I've seen that shit happen, and you guys don't want to see that. Nwamba has a tendency to eat a lot of bath salts or snort bath salts. How does that work exactly? You the bath salt to zombie transformation, exactly. How does that work? Do you snort it, or is that something that you just, like, digest and or whatnot? Or?
Well, you know, sometimes up my ass, I'll just, like, crush it up and just shove it up my ass.
Oh, wow. Oh. Straight to the source.
That's when I really go. Yeah, that's when I go fucking buck wild. The best. So.
Yeah, that's like
talking about the anal of the best.
Hell yeah!
When they get into your anal, they attack.
Yeah, it happens like that. Well, goddamn, that was a good story, man. I dug the fuck out of that. I did want to go ahead and mention that we do have, I am seeing that Michelle McDaniel is hanging out with us on the line, so I appreciate that. Appreciate you coming by, Michelle. And I did want to take the time to mention that Michelle will be part of the Mothpocalypse reading. That will be on November 4th, 2012, here in Albuquerque, New Mexico, at the Harwood Arts Center, as part of the Literary Underground and the Meth Lab, because Michelle McDaniel has been published in the Meth Lab probably more than few people, actually, if you think about it. I don't know. Is it possible, Nwamba, that Michelle McDaniel has been published in the Meth Lab as much as you have? Is that possible?
I don't know. I think she's had, what, 3 or so? Yeah, just about the same as me, about. Yeah.
She's got to be up there. What is this? No telephones. We don't need telephones. Maybe we are on autopilot tonight, man. We might be.
We could be. We could be, man. Yeah. Could be.
Crazy.
Yeah, we got any callers? We got anybody calling in?
Not yet at the moment. I'm going to read one quick selection, and then we'll check back and see what's going on. I just wanted to read this. I wanted to read this section in Infinite Jest by Dick Foster Wallace, actually. And this is from page 257 out of, like, 1,200. Jesus Christ. And that's as far as I've gotten into this book, bro. Like, this book is so heavy. Like, I tried to carry it to the Bosque with me the other day, and, like, literally it was just so heavy I could not keep it in my backpack there. I'm going to read this one. And it's 257. Hallie, let me just ask, and then I'll never bring it up again. You implied before that what was especially traumatic was that himself, Dad's head, had popped like an uncut spud. Then on what turned out to be the last day of the therapy, the last day before the A-Squads were picked for Indianapolis, after I finally delivered the goods, and my traumatic grief was professionally pronounced uncovered in countenance and process when I put on my sweatshirt and got set to take my leave and came up to the desk and put out my hand in a trembly, grateful way he couldn't possibly have refused, and he stood and brought out the hand and shook my hand, I finally understood. His hands were disfigured or something? His hands were no bigger than a four-year-old girl's. It was surreal, this massive authoritative figure with a huge red meaty face and thick walrus mustache and dewlaps and a neck that spilled over the rim of his shirt collar. And his hands were tiny and pink and hairless and butt soft, delicate as shells. His hands were the capper. I barely made it out of the office before it started. The cathartic, post-traumatic-like re-experience hysteria. You reeled out of there. I barely made it to the men's room down the hall. I was laughing so hysterically. I was afraid all the periodontists and CPAs on either side of the men's room would hear. I sat in the stall with my hands over my mouth, stamping my feet and beating my head against first one side of the stall and then the other in hysterical mirth. If you could have seen those hands, but you got through it all, and you could thumbnail sketch the overall feeling for me. What I feel is myself gathering my resources for the right foot, finally. That magic feeling is back. I'm not lining up the vectors for the wastebasket or anything. I'm not even thinking. I'm trusting the feeling. It's like that celluloid moment when Luke removes his high-tech targeting helmet. What helmet? You know. Of course, that human nails are the vestiges of talons and horns, that they're atavistic like coccyges and hair, that they develop in utero long before the cerebral cortex. What's the matter? And at some point in the first trimester, we lose our gills but are now still, now little more than a bladdery sac of spinal fluid and a rudimentary tail and hair follicles and little microchips of vestigials, talons, and horns. And that's it.
Shit, man. David Foster Wallace. Yeah. He just goes, like, so many places so quick. Now, which is always, you know, what I love about his writing is he explores, like, different things, so many different places. And he'll start with one thing and then wind up in a completely different space. You know, he's talking to this huge guy and shaking his hand and being all small, and then he goes on to, like, you know, how the human body is formed. It's just, I don't know, man, it's just, he just, it's quite brilliant. One of my favorite books there.
Yeah, my favorite part of it actually was him. He was actually discussing...
he's like trying to fool his therapist, actually, he has to fool his therapist into believing that he's having some sort of breakthrough. And basically, through the process of doing that, he ends up analyzing himself. So... crazy shit, man.
Yeah, you should really read something quite interesting on therapy and some of the issues, I guess, he was facing himself. But he wrote this short story called The Depressed Person. One of the most brilliant ever written. It's just about this person who's terribly depressed, and you know, they're seeing a psychiatrist, but they're also talking to all their friends about it. It just goes to so many different places, and you know, it's just absolutely examples, and then the footnotes in there. Like he starts out with like just kind of small footnotes throughout the story, and they just get bigger and bigger. And like as the story goes on, like the footnotes start to take over the whole story. There's just like a little bit of text and just like huge footnotes throughout the whole story.
Yeah.
Like the footnotes just like basically expand into the story and go up into like all these different places, like how this person has all these different people that they call when they're feeling so that they can talk to them, and they have like different, they have like a whole list of people to call, and then if this person isn't here or they're feeling so much more depressed, then they'll call this person. And it's fucking roots, man. You gotta check out the story. The press.
I'm gonna definitely, as soon as I can make it through this 10-pound suicide letter that he wrote, basically. That's what I feel like this book is turning into, man. There's been so many people that have just offed themselves in this book, and I haven't even gotten past page 300 yet. You know what I mean? It's crazy.
Yeah, well, probably that was a recurring theme. That was a recurring theme in his work. He wrote another story about, it was something like suicide as a solution or something like that, or suicide as a, he wrote really in depth in the story about, like, you know, just kind of like the thought behind killing yourself and, like, you know, flashing back on your, just that kind of mindset. So, you know, sadly that was like a very common theme in his work, and, you know, he wound up actually doing it himself, which is ultimately tragic. But, you know, he wrote about it in a different way than maybe Sylvia. I think Sylvia Plath, she wrote about it in a much more kind of like hardcore, striking kind of way, whereas he looked at it from like more of like a psychoanalytical kind of perspective. I don't know.
Very clinical. He's very clinical with his approach. So, we do have callers. We've got several callers, actually. Should we bring in, we've got Michelle McDonald sitting here, and she was the first one here. And we should bring her in, right? Should we bring in Michelle?
But does she have her hand up? That's all.
I don't even know. I can't tell with this new switchboard thing, man. I really can't.
Yeah, well, then just bring her in anyway, then.
Yeah, let's do it. Michelle McDonald, hello. How are you?
Hello. I listened to like 20 minutes of techno online.
Really?
I thought I would call in. Yeah, it's just like looping over and over, and I feel like, you know, now I'm having a mental fit of some kind or something.
It's really weird.
Wow, that's strange.
Is there like a weird techno button that you pushed?
I did not. As far as I can tell, we've been going the entire time. But see, the phone rings all the time, so I don't know.
You did, Metro, man. I was you, Metro. Did something, didn't you, man?
I did, I guess.
Something. Yeah. He did something. I blame him for this. He pissed
blame
off
me
Skype.
For it. I'm fine. I'll Skype take the heat for it.
Yeah, Skype has infected talk radio. Taken over Blog Talk Radio. Techno music. For our show.
Evil. That's fucking evil. I'm not one that's opposed to dubstep or anything like that, but I'm seeing that in the chat room right now. I'm seeing there's several people that are saying so much dubstep. What is going on? What has been happening on the show? I would like to know, seriously.
So then I call in and I heard Nuwamba, you know, reading this story, and I'm like, what the hell? So I went on Facebook and there's people posting, what's going on, you know?
I think I actually may have done something wrong and cursing Skype earlier at the beginning of the show. I think Nuwamba was right, and this is payback.
Yeah, that's right, man.
Yeah.
Never talk bad about Skype. Skype has very sensitive feelings.
I won't do it anymore. But since we do have Michelle McDonald on the line. Michelle, reading at My Apocalypse, perhaps, Michelle, you would like to read something besides looping dubstep.
I don't want to read anything. Oh, shit.
No. You got to get some practice in, Michelle. You got performances coming up. You got big guest appearances in Albuquerque. You got to gotta get that practice in there.
Okay, let me see here. What we got?
Yeah, I put her on the spot. See that, Nuwamba? That's how you get things
done. This is the Every Reason for 12. Let's see, who's in this? Oh my God, that's long. Oh, here's some Rebecca Shumega. However you say that.
Mm-hmm.
How to appreciate ritual destruction. That sounds good. Mm-hmm. On my way out to get our mail, I see our neighbor who tells me that yesterday a dozen cop cars surrounded a house down the block in the middle of the day. I thumb through bills and the grocery circular as he goes on about how he heard that another neighbor called CPS on the family because they deal drugs and beat their children. As he laments over the downfall of our community, I am overjoyed to discover that avocados are on sale for 50 cents each. But I don't tell him this. Instead, I liken the neighborhood to a sand mandala, but he thinks I am referring to the extended happy hour at the new gay bar that just opened up down the street. I want to take the time to explain how the whole neighborhood is being ritualistically destroyed to symbolize life's transitory nature, that these fruits will sell fast, at least the ripe ones that aren't scarred by the mass hysteria of the sale.
Mm. I like that. What do you think, Nuwamba?
I like avocados, man. I like avocados. And gay bars, too. I don't know what kind
yeah.
of pretty fun
there's. There's like a whole like milieu of like different sort of like weird accoutrements in that piece, like the sand mandala, the avocado. Yeah, I like that. That's
well, good.
Good
commentary on modern society, man. It's really good commentary on modern society. It's like mm-hmm. how you know that there's a kind of like serious troubling. With kind of like, I don't know, frivolities. So, I don't know. Mm. It was kind of interesting. It's cool. Cool piece.
Mm. Hell yeah. Excellent choice there, Michelle McDonald. Very excellent choice. And, yeah, and of course, so you said that was in Every Reason zine. Is that correct?
Yeah. I think this is the last one, unfortunately. I really dig it.
Oh, yeah. Well, you guys, and, you know, if there's anybody out there, and, of course, you guys want to figure out how to get a hold of that, please get in contact with our chief tyrant, Michelle McDonald. You're the chief tyrant, right? That's you now.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, God.
All right. We do like hardcore people like Michelle McDonald around here, and, of course, another hardcore radio personality, as I like to call him. It's Mr. Doc Sigerson. I'm going to bring him in. Notice I said Mr. Doc, because he deserves the extra Mr. with his PhD in hardcore. Doc Sigerson, hello. Hello.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Hello. Can you hear me now?
I can.
I can. Do you hear me?
Yeah. Yes.
Cool. You can hear us over all the looping dubstep and techno music going on, right?
Oh, you're going to have hours and hours of fun listening to the archives.
Oh, Jesus Christ. I'm so scared right now. I'm going to have to start taking other host advice.
Is it techno music?
From what I understand,
is it techno music under ours? Well, was it under our voices or was it over our voices?
You cannot hear any voices at all. It was drowning you out. It was only music.
Wow. You know what? I'm looking at the switchboard. I don't see anything that's still playing. I hope it wasn't this Saint Germain street scene. Hold on. Let me see. Did it sound like this? I'm just going to test it out. Did it sound like this?
No, it didn't sound like that.
Didn't sound like that at all, huh? Okay. Well, I pushed stop here, and it's still not stopping. What's going on? Okay. So, it wasn't that. That's actually the only thing that I can think of that would be continuously looping, because that one's like 15 minutes and 45 seconds long. But evidently that's not it. All these Blog Talk Radio bugs, they come in, they go. And, you know, we just roll with the punches, as Mr. Brian Fugier likes to say. Doc Sigerson, welcome to the show, man. It's been a while since we got to hear from you, and I was wondering maybe if you happen to bring something to the table of the meth labs, or...
Well, I always have something at hand. I'm going to read a little piece by Gregory Corso. And this is called Last Night I Drove a Car, a Dream. Last night I drove a car, not knowing how to drive, not owning a car. I drove and knocked down people I loved, went 120 through one town. I stopped at Hedgeville and slept in the back seat, excited about my new life. That was last night I drove a car.
I love Gregory Corso. I just recently watched Fried Shoes and Cooked Diamonds. I believe it's a documentary about the Jack Kerouac School of Disembodied Poetics at Naropa. And he was actually one of the instructors there during the filming of that. And I don't know, like, what I really appreciate about the guy is his sense of humor. And I think he's got, like, out of the beats, I think he probably had one of the best sense of humors out of them all. He didn't take himself so seriously. But I'm glad you brought up Gregory Corso, because this actually switches me over to talking about Gary Snyder. I wanted to get your opinion on this, Doc. Gary Snyder, who was recently awarded a $100,000 grant by an organization, I just wanted to get your take on that. Like, how do you feel as a person that is still writing in the contemporary world? How do you feel about people like The Beat still getting such accolades and whatnot?
Well, I think it's great. I think if you live long enough and produce enough work that you'll get recognized. I see, in a similar vein, Lawrence Ferlinghetti is, I think he had a chair named after him at the University of San Francisco or something. It's in the paper this morning.
I'm going to have to be honest with you guys. I'd like to get everybody's opinion on this, but I got to be honest with you guys. I'm a little bit disturbed by the fact that someone that has lived a really rich life, like Gary Snyder, who's accomplished a whole hell of a lot in the literature world, then I'm not taking anything from him for that. But I think that there's a lot of great contemporary writers out here right now that could have used that money a lot better. I could think of five people that I would have rather have seen get that $100,000 so they can travel the world and, like, get a world experience and help their writing in order to help the world out a little bit better. And I don't know. Maybe that's just me, and maybe that's a little bit of a fascist ideal, but...
Sure.
Yeah. You know, but...
Lottery. It's like somebody winning the lottery who's like 90 years old and retired and probably only has a year to live anyway.
Mm.
You know?
Well, no, you see, like, my thing is like, you know, I know, and me and Nuwama discussed this to an extent before the show, but my thing is that, you know, The Beat generation is all well and good. I appreciate what they contributed to literature in America. They really made an impact. But there are so many other great writers out here right now that are not even on the same vein as those guys. And, you know, why aren't these people getting that kind of assistance that they need to go out there in the world and to really do something great? That's just my thing. I don't know.
Okay. Well, I'm out of minutes, so I have to let you go.
Oh, okay. All right, Sigerson. Well, I appreciate you stopping by, brother.
Thanks for calling, too. Always
good. Yeah. Wow. So, Nuwamba, what's your take on that, actually?
No, man, I kind of have, you know, opinions on it. I'm kind of ambivalent. Like, yeah, in a way, I sort of agree with what Sigerson's saying. You know, it's good that, you know, people are recognized for what they're doing and what they have done, you know, over a period of time. At the same time, yeah, I mean, I sort of agree with you in that there is money and more kind of opportunity for writers and artists and contemporary artists, you know, to report it and to get those kind of, you know, grades. I don't know. I think that we are, society just getting so far from art and writing, you know, that's just not valuable. It's not really as valued as it should be. And I'd like to see more, you know, up-and-coming artists, you know, be, you know, have a spotlight on more opportunities than they currently do. So,
yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I kind of have feelings on it, you know.
It's a mixed situation, and you know what? I have to, you know, like I said, congratulations to Gary Snyder for winning that. Like, I'm not going to hate on you for it, bro. I am going to, like, question the people that gave it to you, though. That's what I'm going to do. We do have a 720 on the line. They've been holding very patiently, so I'm going to go ahead and bring them in. And I think maybe the question mark on that on here means that they're raising their hand. I'm noticing that not everybody has a question mark every now and again. So, 720, you're live.
Hey, this is Dustin.
Hey, Dustin Holland. How you doing, brother?
I'm good. How are you?
Good, man. Good. Thanks for calling in.
Yeah, no, I was just going to listen, and then the techno and the dub scared me away.
That scares me that happens. I'm going to be honest with you. Like, I'm still trying to figure out how that happened.
You know, I was just, like, I was listening, and I thought, oh, this is a nice introductory song, and then it didn't stop, so.
That's fucked up. That's fucked up.
That is fucked up, actually.
Yeah,
well,
Skype,
Dustin,
man. Skype.
Yeah, it's got to be the Skype, man. It's got to be the Skype. Dustin, since you have called in, go ahead and pose the question that we were discussing just a minute ago. And you happen to be in a class of writers that's a little bit younger. You guys are up and coming. What's your take on the Gary Snyder $100,000 grant?
I'm jealous of him. I don't know. I think it's odd because, like, I really respect and like Gary Snyder. He's definitely like one of my favorite authors out there. And I didn't know that he won that or whatever. But it's definitely kind of strange that like people have seen fit to give him like a grant. Because frankly, I don't know that he needs it unless he's fallen on like super hard times. But the guy won like the Pulitzer Prize for poetry like 30 fucking years ago. You know, so
right.
I don't. Like, it seems like he's, like, the last person who would need that sort of grant. And, I mean, I guess as far as lifetime achievement goes, you could argue that he deserves it. But I think there are other people who, like, could potentially deserve it and need it, you know. But
You know what?
I would
totally give that money to you, bro, if I was in charge of that. I'd give it to Dustin Holland. And I'd tell Dustin Holland to go out into the world. I'm straight up. Go out
that's
in the world, sweet. Right.
I'd give it to you if I had.
No, I wouldn't
money.
Take that shit, man. I wouldn't take it.
Huh.
I have to live my life the way it is. I can't take all that shit. But I
well,
think
I
someone
it.
Like you yeah. deserves a service. I'm not going to kiss your ass the entirety of the show. I'm not going to do that, but.
Well, whatever works.
Yeah. I appreciate the fuck out of it. That's all I'm saying. There's a younger class of people out there that could really use that stuff, so. You know what? That just gives more inspiration for, and I think that's like the key of it, is it just gives more inspiration for people like you out there and for people like, you know, I can name some other people like the Frank Reardons, the Michelle McDonalds, all these people out there. It gives us more inspiration to keep going at it and maybe like one day, I don't want a big reward or anything like that, but maybe one day we all will find ourselves in a situation where we can do what we really love and put it out there. And that's all it's about. That's what I think, anyway. I don't know. Dustin, since you are on the line, and I do appreciate you calling in, I was wondering if you brought something for the meth labs there.
Well, like the closest poem I have, I already sent you today, but if you wouldn't mind hearing it again, I guess I could read it.
Yeah, please.
All right. Let me find it. Shit. It's like when Miguel Pinheiro stands naked on the roof of the hell that lives in your head. The hell that tries to escape during the Monday night news. The hell that used to write all my poems. MTV's reckoning moves down Butterknife Creek like a switchblade. Anti-gravity milk leaks through the cracks in the fridge. Disenfranchised youth write their own ghost dance out the door. And it's like when Miguel Pinheiro stands naked in the cold air and the stars behind your eyes, a planet unto himself. I need to learn to stop shaving. Wild Apache pirates from Colorado bum around the country in ridiculous hats, because maybe life should be like the end of a great movie, or a play, or a Van Gogh painting, or something, innocent and beautiful and free. And I guess it's sort of like when Miguel Pinheiro stands naked just outside of one last almost holy moment with nothing to say.
Wow. Wow. Nuwamba, what did you think, bro?
Fucking good.
Yeah.
What's weird? I want to see those pirates. I want to see pirates from Colorado. Weird hats. Standing naked outside in the cold. I want to see that.
Hell yeah.
That was very cool. Very good.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
I like. I mean, and I told you this earlier. I really love Miguel Pinheiro. Anybody that. Talks about Miguel Pinheiro's automatically got mad respect for me, especially coming from your generation, sir. I appreciate that. And it just melded together beautifully. It was one kick-ass poem.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. See, man, $100,000 for you, and, like, look, you'd be in Puerto Rico right now fucking writing about Miguel Pinheiro in Puerto Rico. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, well... I can write about Miguel Pinheiro in, like, the suburbs of Colorado for a little longer.
There you go. Amen. Hell yeah, Dustin. I appreciate that. Hang out with us for a minute, man. Don't go anywhere, because we do have another caller. But don't go anywhere, man. Hell yeah. Right on. We do have 13 minutes left of live streaming, of course. Number to call in, 805-856-2808. We promise there will be no more dubstep, techno, or Skype problems in the next little bit. That being said, we have a 561 on the switchboard. I'm going to go ahead and bring them in because they've been waiting very patiently. I'm not seeing a question mark beside their name, but I'm going to go ahead and bring them in. 561, you're live. 561. Or not.
561. 6-1, where are you? Back.
Yeah. And it looks like we're still having the dubstep problem.
Yeah.
For the people that are listening in. Yeah.
Oh, fucking.
Hello.
Oh,
hi. I hear dogs. This has been an awesome show. I love this. Oh.
Yeah, this show has been fucked.
It's been so fucking weird, man.
What the fuck, man? What happened to this?
I have no idea. You know what? I'm not going to even say I love Skype. I just want Skype to know that. I love you, Skype. As soon as I say that, my Skype connection drops as soon as I say that.
Well, maybe it's the gremlins on BTR. We always used to talk about BTR.
Dude, they come around a lot.
BTR. Maybe it's... Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm actually surprised because usually people say that I'm the gremlin. That's the one that's causing the issues on BTR. They usually say it's me. I'm not causing it this time. It's totally not me with the gremlins and anything. I'm being affected, yeah. Okay,
What are you calling in from your phone?
I'm calling in now.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, there. Okay. All right. So, I'm sorry about that. 561, you're still unmuted. Just want you to know that. 561.
Maybe the
dog.
I don't know,
maybe
man.
A dog,
this is crazy.
I picked up the phone and, like, bowed.
Well, how about we just go ahead and close out the show, man? I got a plate of fish here in front of me. I'm starving, to be honest with you. And this has just been madness all night long. I haven't smoked enough dope for this, man. I really haven't.
Really? Yeah. You gotta do that, man. You gotta be on a like that.
Yeah. I agree.
Yeah, man, well, fuck it. We can just close the shit out, I guess. It's been fun.
Yeah, close
least,
it out for us.
Yeah.
You should close it out for us, bro.
Yeah. You want me to read something, or?
Yeah, definitely.
Anybody can, if they can't even hear it. I guess so.
We'll read to the gods of Skype. Read to the gods of Skype.
Yeah. I'm going to go old school. I called a phone sex hotline and impersonated an elderly British woman. That was an unlikely story a few years ago. So here it goes. 12. I walked into Walmart with an Eskimo gear and an imaginary jump rope all through the aisles and dived off the dining room set and yelled, "I want a new television!" And at the security guard escorted me out the door in the room. So I didn't buy any new televisions. And I cross-country skied through the city streets back to my... I flapped one arm like a bird and practiced my... ball. One of the circus clowns I have duct taped to my balcony can shot from his... That clown broke free and ran into my apartment, tried to fuck the floor, then frantically banged on my neighbor's front door, repeatedly requesting to use the bathroom. 10. Called up a phone sex hotline and impersonated an elderly British woman. 9. Thought about punching that snaggletooth Jamaican bus driver that had an eye which is slightly bigger than the other eye. 8. Saw a short Pakistani man in a one-piece mini skirt sleeping on the roof of a cop car and screamed out my window to him about the naked man with a machine gun that lives in the park and says he got an octopus and a banshee in his fanny pack. The short Pakistani man subsequently kangaroos like pony sing like person, of which I did not. 7. Unbeknownst pelican math teacher that crawled out of my toilet punched the broken kitchen sink. Thought back to when I was a transvestite. Done dragged my psychiatrist by his web foot and phoned the man